You are joining Making a Difference with Melissa Clark, a new show that shares the compelling stories and voices of well-known and everyday people who change the world in big and small ways. Enjoy our guests, call in, or just listen to be inspired, for this show was made with you in mind. Please join us every Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with our special guests. And you can listen to our recast at www.melissaclarkshow.com.
Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us today on Making a Difference. I'm Melissa Clark. We've all been going through so much with this coronavirus and being at home and not being able to reach out to people. So I wanted to have a lovely, beautiful lady today, Dr. Tara Cousineau. Did I say it right?
Got it.
Good. She is a clinical psychologist, and she's going to help us. I've been looking at your information on my social media, so I came up with some questions. And Dr. Tara, my first question to you is, what can we do to be of service to one another at this time of isolation?
You know, that's a really good question. And I have to say that I, you know, these kinds of crises bring out the best in people. And I think that we're seeing that. And we have to really actually direct our attention to noticing it and sharing when we see the good. So I've been impressed with people's ingenuity and creativity. I mean, they're, you know, AA meetings are online, people are doing virtual workouts, families are coordinating, you know, virtual dinners together. There's so many things that people are doing. And then there are the things that they're doing in the community, raising money to get gift cards to disadvantaged families, kids and people sewing PPE masks. Those stories abound. And I think it's so important for us really to get a daily dose of the good in the midst of all of this. Otherwise, our attention is going to go right to what's threatening and scary.
That's right. Do you think a lot of people are scared to catch this virus if they are going to do this service, if they are going to be of service to people?
Yes, and I think it's appropriate, actually. Mm-hmm. We need to be careful. We need to have anxiety. I think, you know, we know a lot according to the CDC, but there are still, like, every day we seem to be learning new things. So, you know, my advice is follow the CDC guidelines. If anything, that's the only thing people should really be looking at. And while there is a lot of uncertainty moving forward, we don't really know how this is going to net out. We're all trying to work towards flattening the curve. But when we do, when we are physically close to people, we have to really be careful during this time.
That's right. Thank you, Dr. Tara. Now, a lot of people are going through depression and anxiety. So what tips can you give to somebody who, you know, has never experienced, we've never experienced anything like this before? I find myself every other day, I can't get up out of my couch. Like, I just want to watch the news, and I just feel so sorry for these people. And then I have friends who passed away, friends who were in the hospital. What tips do you give to people?
Yeah, you know, I think this is an unprecedented and unusual time for many of us. I mean, many of us did not live through a world war or, you know, major calamities. I think you start to live long enough, like me, I'm sort of like in my fifth decade, and you start to zoom out a little bit. And I have, my mother is 82 and German and grew up in a toddler in the war. And she and her friends who are still alive are like, okay, we've lived through hard times before. We have to remember that humans are really resilient. So that's one thing, right? To understand the abstract. But when you're already struggling, you're already coming into something like this with some sort of vulnerability, whether it's anxiety or depression, it will be amplified. And that is an actual normal kind of response, that this is going to be amplified now. So we have to really be kind to ourselves and have some compassion and remember that you are not alone. We are not alone. We're in this together, and we don't need to suffer alone. So, you know, I always have four recommendations, and, you know, I this is my livelihood, essentially. And we always have to stick to the basics. And there are four main things in the basics. It's getting really good quality sleep at night. So if you're watching the news at night, I would say, you know what? Go check the news first thing in the morning. Limit yourself to 20 minutes. And make sure that you're going to bed on time and that you're getting up at the same time every day. Like, keep that routine going, because if you don't have good quality sleep, it makes everything else worse. And then the second thing is to actually eat and eat healthy. I mean, you know, some people are probably, you know, catching, you know, well, the college 15, the COVID-19 now, like, you know, they've got so much food in their house. And other people really aren't, you know, they're in lines. So we really have to figure out a way in our lives to nourish ourselves within reason, within, you know, rationalizing, you know, what we have, you know, we just need to do these basic things, not go overboard in one direction or the other. So I think eating healthy, and we have to nourish ourselves. We have to have the food as our energy, right? So we need to do that. The other thing is physical activity. And I know this has been so hard for so many people. Like I said, you know, there's all these virtual workouts happening all over, which is wonderful, but there's no reason for most of us that we can't go outside and, you know, get some physical activity and walk for 20 minutes or walk for 30 minutes. So important, because human beings are designed to move. We think while we move, we innovate while we move, you know, we're nomads, you know, in our evolutionary history. So we need to keep moving somehow. And I know that people are glued, you know, like you said, you know, just watching the news, can't get away from it. And so it's get up, walk around, even if it's in your own little nook in the world. And then the fourth thing is stay connected. You know, this social distancing is really physical distancing. It doesn't mean that we can't connect with one another. And so we need to do that as well. And I think the risk there, Melissa, from your first question about, you know, people who are depressed, you know, loneliness is an epidemic in this country. One out of four people feel alone and lonely and can't even name one person that they can share their trials with or their triumphs with. And so that's a real problem already. So we need to really be purposeful about the connections that we have and to make them quality connections. You know, people that we can count on. I know that many people are kind of reaching sort of back to people that they really care about from their childhood and their upbringings. And yeah. So some new connections are being, or renewed connections are arising, which is nice, but having those connections. So those four things are the basics.
I think those are very important. Thank you. And I know this, thank you. I know this isn't on one of my questions to you, but I see a lot of people and they're like, oh, it's 10 o'clock. We're going to have a glass of wine. Do you have any recommendations? Like, you know, because people, they want to calm their nerves, right? So not that many people are taking medication, Wellbutrin or you know, what mm-hmm. have you. So, I mean, do you think it's healthy? Perhaps maybe like after 5 or 6, just to have one glass of wine just to, you know, but I see a lot of people
to wind down.
But I see a lot of people on social media and they're like, you know, they're pouring wine in their cereal. They're just making jokes, but this can actually promote a substance abuse problem. What do you think about
that? You know, I think there's a lot of addictions that could be on the rise, you know, when we're sort of isolated, right? Because we do things to sort of numb the pain or the distress or the boredom, right? So, okay. I mean, I saw one news article that, you know, porn addiction is going to go up, you know? So, and it just made me stop and think, you know, at first it was like, oh, really? Oh yeah, that could happen. But same
what,
thing.
What is
you know,
it, Dr. Tara? I'm sorry, corn.
Porn.
Oh, like, porn?
Right? So, you know.
Yes. Right? I thought you said corn.
No. So, oh my gosh. You know, so if you think about all the addictions, retail therapy, mm-hmm. drinking, substance use, whatever entertainment, you know, gambling, all of these things that are sort of common ways for people to kind of soothe their suffering or distress. We just need to really be mindful that that can go overboard. Right. So, you know, I think even if there wasn't this epidemic happening, you know, the drinking should be for you know, to accompany a good meal and for a celebration, and it's done rather infrequently than every day, you know, because it's just too easy. Because our brains, you know, we're kind of weak that way, you know, like once our brains get something good, it's going to want more of it. It's going to want more of that sort of, you know, pleasure experience. So we do have to really just be a little bit mindful of that.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to address that for yeah. people who had any inquiries. My question to you is social media. Everybody blows everything out of proportion. The other day, I saw a letter. Everybody's going to be quarantined from 48 hours to 72 hours. Stay at home. You know, people are just scaring the wits out of you. Then you also have your political views. You know, they're bashing Governor Cuomo and President Trump. How do you have a healthy social media behavior towards people when all this is going on?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was a problem before this epidemic, yeah. really, right? I mean, we were always yeah. trying to kind of figure out how to have a balanced social media diet. And now it's just gone off the deep end. And again, so here's the thing, and this is, it's helpful just to understand a little bit, you know, the human brain is going to latch on to whatever is sensational or dramatic or potentially threatening. Right. We can't help that as human beings. That's the negativity bias. It's basically our background surveillance system, right? And then when our attention is latched onto something that's sensational or potentially threatening, we can't help but look at it, to experience it. And so we need to really be careful about not getting hooked by that negativity bias. I mean, it's really only there to serve us to get out of the way when there's a snake in front of us or a tiger jumps out of the bushes, but not every single day, 24/7, really, which is what's happening. So with social media, we have to learn, and this is where actually I think we could help each other with this, is that some, you know, if we're retreating in place now, we need to kind of be accountability partners to each other and really limit the time. I mean, there is no reason to be on the news more than 20 minutes a day.
Right.
You get your update, you see what you need to do. You know, it's pretty much the same news. I mean, even though it feels really unpredictable and uncertain, it's pretty predictable what we have to do now, which is stay in place, do our work from home, keep this physical distancing, wash your hands, do all those things. That is predictable. Right. If you allow yourself to kind of just get sort of swooped into the whole stream of the media hijack on the amygdala, that's that, you know, emotion center of the brain, you're just exposing yourself to risk for anxiety, for PTSD, disconnection, overwhelm.
That's right. And since you mentioned PTSD, I know that's the last question, but I have a question before that. But the PTSD, do you think a lot of people are going to come out of this with PTSD?
Well, I don't know about a lot of people, but I think it's a risk. It's always a risk with any kind of calamity. Think of Katrina or 9/11 or the Boston Marathon bombing. You know, there is research that shows that the people who spent more time on the sensational news mm-hmm. actually were very similar to the people who were actually present in those experiences in terms of their traumatic stress response, because the brain doesn't know the difference between imagery and what's really happening. We have to really tend to our brains in a very careful way. So if we're exposing ourselves to sensational news and all like the horror that's happening out there, then our brain is taking in this negativity, and it's traumatic, and it's making you vulnerable. So yes, I do think that there is going to be a certain percentage of people who are going to be affected by this, you know, down the road. And I've also seen, as a clinical psychologist, since, you know, most of the people I see have some form of anxiety or depression or stress, mm-hmm. Is that for some people who have had loss or previous serious health issues in their lives in childhood and young adulthood, this virus is actually really stirring up a lot of their fears. I had one young man who had experienced a cancer earlier in his life, and he feels like he hadn't processed it because it's coming up now, 10 years later.
Right.
He said, yeah, of course. You know, so there's this heightened sensibility now that's happening because we can't get away from it really. So we need to practice ways to kind of get away from it.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting that you brought that up because I'm hearing left and right people are dying and it's like, oh, all right. I mean, it's just bound to happen. Like my brain is basically kind of getting used to all these deaths right now, but perhaps maybe 5 years from now, it's going to catch up to me. Or maybe, you know, after this whole thing is over, I'm going to be like, oh my God, that person's really gone. I can't call them. And then, you know, it's just like, because when people die individually, so like my parents passed away mm-hmm. and that took me a long time to get through. I went through all my grieving stages and it's like now, oh my God, that person's in a coma. Oh, I hope they break free. So is that normal for someone to feel like we're getting used to what's going on right now while we're in this pandemic?
Yeah, I think what's happening is that as the numbers get larger and larger and larger is that mm-hmm. we're adjusting to this number that we actually really can't relate to. Right? It's hard to relate to these big numbers, thousands and thousands and thousands, right?
Right.
And then until something really hits close to home, it's not really going to seem so real, right? And so, you know, I think with things like post-traumatic stress symptoms, like it might not be an entire syndrome, but you know, what can arise are feelings of hypersensitivity, hyper alertness, sometimes overwhelming emotions, and you don't know why they just popped up, right? Things like that can happen. And so again, I think it's really about doing a lot of the self-care, doing daily practices that will build resilience. And that really actually has a lot to do with calming down the parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And if we can practice that in our daily life, it helps to build resilience. It helps to build sort of an inner resource that we can call on over time when we might get hit with something unexpected or an unexpected thought or emotion arises. So there are things that we can do that can really help us.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps you'll teach us that and we'll get
sure.
we'll tear it in with this whole segment. And my last question to you is, how would you tell young kids about what's going on and how do you listen to their feelings of what they're feeling while they're at home?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I really rely on the wonderful teachings of Mr. Fred Rogers,
yeah.
who, you know, really, I mean, he was amazing. And one of the messages that he repeated over and over again that he demonstrated is that our feelings are mentionable and manageable. Mm-hmm. They're mentionable and they're manageable. And so we need to talk about our feelings. We don't really get taught growing up, any of us, on how to speak about our emotions, how to manage them, right? So either we push them away or we're having temper tantrums. It's like usually one extreme or the other.
Right.
And so I think with small children now, it's going to be understandable that they're worried and it's really developmental. You know, like a three-year-old probably won't have any, you know, idea necessarily and will be curious of why they have to stay in the house all day, right?
Right.
And then you really have to speak to that child as a three-year-old or a five-year-old cognitively can take it in. Like, oh, you know, there's a virus going around that can really affect older people. So we're all just trying to stay safe so we don't spread this cold around. I mean, that's what a young child's going to understand. Obviously, you know, you get into, you know, the middle school and teenage years, and then we're dealing with a whole nother issue where they feel invulnerable and are having a hard time. I feel like a lot of parents are having a hard time tying down their kids.
Right.
Because they want to go and hang out, right? I mean, young adults, college kids too, we see them on the beach still. So I think, you know, it's, but with the younger kids, we just really have to allow them to talk about their feelings, name their feelings, reassure them, you know, that thing that we're all doing the best that we can, you know, we just to wash our hands. We have to keep it really simple. We don't need to exaggerate. And I think that we need to actually keep our own, as parents and caregivers and family members, we have to keep our own anxiety in check because kids are very intuitive. They'll pick up on it.
That's right. So much as animals as well. I have a dog. When I don't feel good, I see him running around like he's not doing good as well. So everybody, picks up energies.
It's true, right? And our pets are actually really wonderful beings to befriend, to sit down, pet your loved, you know, animal, and do some deep breathing, because they really gravitate to that too. So we can do that together.
Thank you. You gave us so much great information. Thank you so much. I feel actually calmer. Let's talk about your kindness cure. You're also an author, and you have a book called The Kindness Cure.
Yeah. And you know, it's so interesting about that. This is what it looks like.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice energetic colors here. That came out two years ago. And I wrote that in response to some of the calamities that were happening a number of years ago. There was one year where we had, well, I live in Boston, so it was the Boston Marathon bombing, Sandy Hook, Connecticut. I grew up in the town right next to that. So there was that bombing, and then there was the movie theater bombing in Aurora, Colorado, right? So there were three major things that happened in one year, and I was raising children, and all of a sudden they weren't feeling safe in school or at the movies or going to public spaces, and there was just this whole sensibility, you know, there was that kind of cool to be cruel culture that was happening online. And so I just kind of was like, what happened to kindness, and what do we not know about it? Because we seem to take it for granted. Like, everybody wants it. Everyone thinks it's a value in their life. They want to see it in their partners and their kids and their bosses. And yet it doesn't seem like we're being very kind to one another. And so that inspired me to write the book. And I feel like I could basically rewrite it again today, but the intro would be different with this current crisis.
That's correct. Do you plan on writing something like this that's going on now?
You know, I don't know. You know, it's, I think in one fashion or another, and I'm not sure how it will turn out. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, you know, I wrote The Kindness Cure as a way to not only take care of ourselves, but to remember the goodness in ourselves and to really spread that and share that with others. And I think that there's also a part of me now that wants to help people dig in deeper to themselves with self-kindness and self-compassion. And so a lot of my work is oriented in the area of mindfulness and self-compassion, and to cultivate those as inner resources and forms of resilience.
We can use that right now in our lives. And you also do a video, CPR, you call it. It's Courage, Presence, Resilience.
A few weeks ago, and this was, so I got my college kids are home, right? They can't finish out their college semesters at their respective colleges. And so my younger one helped me learn iMovie. And so I just put together some videos based on a workshop that I do at the Harvard Counseling Center, which is called Courage, Presence, and Resilience, you know, skills for building resilience. And so the nickname is CPR for mental well-being, which I think is probably pretty apropos for our current climate, is that we all need some CPR skills on just managing our emotional lives. And so those are some of my favorite tools and skills that I think actually I have found to be very helpful for people in cultivating resilience in the face of stress.
Right. I love it. Thank you so much. One other last question. You as a human being, how are you getting through this as a person? Do you do meditation and yoga?
I do. And you know, I think one of the things that has been helpful, well, I'm still working. I'm just working remotely.
That's right.
But I get up and I make my bed. Like, I'm trying to really stick to a very simple routine. I get up, I make the bed, I do a shower, just like as if I was going to work, so that I could just really start the day feeling fresh and energized. Otherwise, I'd be like my college kids who are still in their beds, in their pajamas, with their, you know, their laptops open, right?
Right.
So I think for me, one of the ways is to stick to a routine and to also just do just one thing each day that is intentional self-care. You know, so whether that's connecting with a friend, whether that's doing some journal writing, whether that's, oh my gosh, there's an abundance of riches right now in terms of free offerings online, in terms of meditations and things like that. And I also signed up for a writing sprint with a writing coach next week. And, you know, just like, as not that I have more time necessarily in my life, but I lost the 3 hours of my commute, which is great. So now
that's
correct. Have a little bit of extra time, you know, when I'm not, you know, so I'm like, okay, well, what can I do that's just going to just take me away from all of this, you know, work, family, the stress, and just do something that's going to challenge my brain in a different way and hopefully be fun. So I think we all need to do that. We need to find ways to take in the good while we're sheltering in place.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Tara. You're the best. And where can people find you on Instagram?
So I think the Instagram just changed to The Kindness Cure. So you can search for The Kindness Cure there. And then there's my website, tarakuzino.com. And I'm on all the channels if you just search for my name.
And they can find your book on Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the online retailers.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Tara. Dr. Tara, for your help and your assistance, and we wish you the best.
Oh, thanks for having me. We wish all of you may be safe and healthy. You know, may you have ease and kindness in your life.
Thank you, Dr. Tara. I wanted to get the perspective of a child's point of view on how they feel about the coronavirus and what they're going through this pandemic. So I sat down with my 10-year-old nephew, Shane, and here's what he had to say. Right. How do you feel about this virus?
It's very weird because it started by a bat.
Mm-hmm. Are you scared?
Not that much.
Okay, that's good. Are you worried a little bit?
Kind of.
Yeah. Do you know what type of what part of the body this virus attacks?
No.
It's your lungs. It sits in your lungs, and that's why people, you know, they can't breathe, and this is why they get sick. But most of them are coming out of it, you know, so there's nothing to be worried about or fearful because you're home. You're not going anywhere. You're not hanging out with any of your friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have, how long haven't you seen your friends for?
Well, I talk to them when we play video games, but mm-hmm. It's like less than a month.
Oh, wow. Do you miss them?
Kind of. It's very boring.
Do you have any of your, did any of your friends catch this virus? Did they get sick?
No.
No, that's good. How do you like being at home learning with your schoolwork?
It's very frustrating and boring.
Is it? Why is it frustrating?
Because if you don't understand something, like there's not a teacher to like help you.
You don't have a resource where somebody you can get a hold of?
We could, like, text our teacher, but, like, they don't respond right away because what if they're not online?
Right.
It takes a very long time for them to respond.
Right. So this is only for now. This is, you know, this is a temporary situation, and I'm sure these teachers are extremely busy, but, you know, I'm sure they'll get right back to you when they're free.
Mm-hmm.
You're so cute. Do you like the way the teachers think about you? Like they're sending you messages and letting them know that they're thinking about their students? What have you received so far?
Like every day they sent like a message like you guys are doing very good and like good stuff about like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you ask your mom and dad what's happening with this virus? Do you ever question them?
Sometimes.
You can't do any of your activities, like you go like to go bowling, right? What's the activities that you like to do outside of the house?
Hockey, going to like Six Flags, like playing soccer, playing baseball, basketball, like in our house and all that. But it's hard to do it in our house because it's a ball in the house.
But mommy's letting you do it for now, right?
Yeah.
Which activity do you miss the most?
Hockey.
Because
we can't, you have to do it in the ice skating rink. And we can't go to the ice skating rink.
Aww.
You can't do it at your house.
Well, you're doing a great job. And I have one more question. Do you know how much I love you?
A lot.
So much. You're the best of the best. I can't wait to see you. I miss you so much. And just keep being great and hang in there, okay? Because this is only temporary and we're all going to get back to our lives. You'll be able to go back to school and you get on that yellow banana bus, right? And you'll see your friends. Now you're in the fourth grade, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, all right. Very good. I love you. And thank you so much for your time and talking with us.
Okay.
Okay. I love you, baby.
Bye.
Bye, sweet pea.